Dr. Pritchett, thank you so much for joining us on the WBGO Journal. We have you here today to talk about something we celebrated earlier this week called Juneteenth. For those that may not know, what exactly is Juneteenth?
Juneteenth is the day, Alexandra, when blacks who were enslaved, particularly, I'll say, west of the East Coast, really found out that they had been made free over 2 years earlier. The Emancipation Proclamation went into effect on January the 1st, 1863. That period of time, obviously, no social media, newspapers were available, but indeed 90% of the Negroes who were in this country were enslaved, had no access to newspapers or any other forms of mass communications. And it was a general who had been dispatched probably from Washington to carry the word west that indeed those people had gotten their freedom long, long ago. It's often thought that perhaps one reason why it may have been delayed was to allow the farmers in the Texas area to get all of their crops in and to make as much money as they could while they beguiled, if you would, the enslaved population.
How significant is Juneteenth to American history?
I would say, as an advocate for history and for folks having a cultural understanding of self, in addition to, if you would, a legal understanding of our rights, very significant. Because when we began to really take our own history within the context of American history more seriously, we really began to unravel, if you would, the underbelly of the moral, ethical structure that underlies the entire American society. What I simply mean by that is that on one level, our society is filled, and our history filled, with a lot of overgeneralizations. We've made heroes out of a lot of people who, by second thought, probably should not be considered heroes, but from the American cultural standard, they meet the definition of heroes. But from a closer examination of their behavior, they would not be considered heroes to everybody. And similarly, an awful lot of the interaction between the enslaved population and the dominant slave-holding population would really tear at the very foundations of what we call democracy and the notions of democratic living. Many of us have a general understanding of what it meant to hold slaves. But until we look particularly at the dehumanization, stigmatization, and also the literally erasing our existence in the American psyche, that's what I would tend to emphasize is why it's important for many of us as possible of all ages and multi-generationally to have a better and more insightful understanding of the interplay between the history of African Americans and the history of the American Republic.
What do you think for the future of this holiday? I mean, it's a state holiday in some states. It's not a federal holiday. Is it still significant? And do you think that the holiday will grow as an actual African American Independence Day?
It needs to. I can only hope and pray that it does. And I'm going to be putting myself and many other colleagues, putting as much of our personal energy into that space that helps people to understand the relevance. We really have generally maybe two schools of thought among African Americans generally about a relationship to history. There are some folks who really, I believe, can't really deal with the realities of what that history would tell them. So consequently, their position is our history is American history. Many others of us who labor in the vineyards of academia would probably say that, no, we are all better informed once we understand the subtleties of things that people want us to forget. You know, for example, if our republic starts at 1776, you know, we have at least 150 to 60 years that starts really before that time, where the first rowboats landed here and the native population were seen as our friends. But later, in the name of our government, we go on to slaughter millions of people. I like to say that when the voices of hatred and racism get loud and make many people feel intimidated, we need to make our voices and our actions louder. I remember very clearly a year and a half ago, the day after the national election in 2016, the Martin Luther King scholars at Seton Hall decided to hold a prayer vigil at 12 noon on the center of campus. And as the circle involved in the prayer got larger and larger, many Muslim students asked permission to join the circle. And we said, of course, you are welcome in the circle. Many of those students were asking me questions like, how in the world have our people dealt with this kind of nonsense for 300 to 400 years? How is it that we can elect a man of, in his public behavior, whose behavior is beyond his business endeavors, which were somewhat suspect also. But how could we elect somebody whose behavior toward women and minorities and speech, spewing all this hatred? How does this happen? And I said, you live in America long enough, every 30 to 40 years, this is what comes around in that political cycle. It is a strategy that has gotten many people into places of prominence. But when these events can make many of us feel bad or intimidated, we must not retreat from our position. We must stand strong. We must use the words of the Bible, whatever it takes, so that we become the voice of righteousness in this nation. And we should not allow it to roll backwards too much longer.
So speaking of the culture of society that we're in now in this moment, you've got a lot of young people, you've got a lot of pop culture kind of chiming in on these issues of racism. And you even have someone like, say, Kanye West, who sparked a debate on slavery, him saying that slavery was a choice. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think that that helps or hurts the cause, the situation, the mood, the racism that we're facing now? Does it help it or does it hurt it?
I think it does both, and I hope that's an adequate answer for you, but I'm going to probably explain, and this is solely my interpretation for some of my students when I was being asked the question. I said perhaps in his own little way, he was attempting to provoke folks to look clearly at that circumstance. Once again, this is my interpretation. By maybe implying that the actions of a Nat Turner were the way we should have gone, and meaning in the context of saying that the longer you accept something, then we become perhaps the victims of our own non-actions. But if we had more slave rebellions, that would be the way to show dissatisfaction with the institutionalization of slavery. To understand that indeed our people are rebellious people, our people are ones who shake up institutions. I think that is really at the heart of the matter. And I don't spend a lot of time following Kanye and many of the commentary coming out of popular culture. I can only hope that that was his intention without saying it publicly. And if it wasn't, it's my intention of saying that indeed. The more we actually avoid those things which are difficult to talk about, we put ourselves at a disadvantage.
Do you see any similarities between what you lived through in the 60s and the civil rights movement and what's happening now?
I certainly do. And I think many of other people have said it well before I have said it. Back in those days, Jim Crow, racism, segregation, the Klan, conservatives were much more in our face. It was more of a public posture. The only problem we had then in the 60s was that in the North, we thought all of that baggage was in the South. The reality was it was in the North, but more polite. As we now look at the 21st century, we simply see a reincarnation of that same period of time, but in a slightly more, it's in a different package right now. It comes to you in business suits. It comes to you through legislation. You know, many of us began to weep small tears when we watched the money from the Koch brothers finding its way into state jurisdictions and laws beginning to be written. We saw state legislatures beginning to reverse policies that were beneficial to all populations, white, black, and brown, everybody. So we need to make sure that indeed we are putting foot soldiers on the track of life so that indeed they can run that good race. We are soldiers of the cross, and the least we can do is put ourselves out there and keep in touch with the way in which racism in this country reinvents itself.
Dr. Pritchett, thank you so much for joining us on the WBGO Journal.